I am publishing the complete text of the bill.
And the section by section analysis.
In the May, June issue. And we have a little preface on the significance of it, and then we have a conclusion on the significance of it. So there's no point going through the issues.
And you saw our opening statements, you received that material.
He has
I not only have received it, I've memorized it.
He so thinks it's the most important thing.
I think it's absolutely the most important bill since the Employment Act.
So I do too.
There's no question. So how? Let's ask some kind of question that has to do about the philosophy behind the bill and the objectives of the bill that would summarize your impression of the, well, let me repeat that so we'll get on the tape. What is your philosophy, what is the philosophy behind the bill, and what are the objectives of the bill, and why do you consider this a significant bill, and I assume the most significant bill since the Employment Act of 1946.
The philosophy behind the bill is to bring about a much better coordination of the economic policy making machinery of the federal government in its relationship to the private sector. Currently, the government's economic decision-making machinery is scattered. The government that has tremendous impact upon our economy, no matter who operates the government or what administration is in power, fails to have any sense of direction. Does not indicate to the country what our economic targets are, except in the most general terms of, quote, prosperity, or, quote, growth, unquote. This bill is designed to give positive and effective direction to national economic growth, to relate productivity to employment, and purchasing power, to mobilize the resources of government in an effort to maximize our production and our income, to assist and aid the private enterprise sector of our national life. The emphasis in the bill is upon private employment, private economic development, but within a framework of national policy. The bill provides a modest mechanism of planning. I think it's maybe the best planning bill that we've come up with. It does not establish new institutional framework, but it does bring together those areas of economic machinery that today are operating individually. For the first time, it relates the Federal Reserve Board to the achievement and the accomplishment of established goals and objectives as ascertained or as resolved by the President and the Congress. I happen to think that feature of the bill is of particular importance. It does not destroy the relative autonomy of the Federal Reserve Board. It merely asks the board to involve itself in, first of all, the approval of goals, and secondly, in the fulfillment of goals. The other part of the bill that I like is that it recognizes that while the private sector has the major responsibility for economic well-being, and that the overwhelming number of jobs will have to be in the private sector, it takes into consideration the historical fact of a gap between the fulfillment of an objective and the effectuation of a policy. For example, under the best of circumstances, with everything working as you'd like it, it is impossible to absorb the large number of unemployed that we have in the private sector in a sufficient period of time to give them jobs and work. I see no way, for example, that you could stimulate the economy to absorb 7 million or 4 million unemployed within the next 15 months, year, or even 18 months. But you can do much better than we're doing, and then you have, under our bill, mechanisms established to supplement the private sector. And I want to emphasize in this rambling discussion here, that this bill does not supplant private investment. It supplements it. It does not supplant the traditional fiscal and monetary and budgetary mechanisms. It supplements it. It is both remedial and preventive in terms of recession and unemployment and inflation. In the counter-cyclical, before the situation gets out of hand at the local level, counter-cyclical aid is advanced. It can be likewise removed as the economy improves. It directs itself also to a very difficult problem that no amount of private enterprise alone is going to get at, and that is called youth. I believe that the manpower studies which have been made, not only by the Joint Economic Committee and other committees of Congress, but by outside competent professionals, that those manpower studies show that the problem today of youth employment, or that youth employment today is a problem separate and distinct from, to at least a degree, from adult employment or unemployment. It's more difficult to bring into the private employment market the number of young people that are available for gainful employment. Therefore, we direct our attention in this bill towards a pervasive, persistent, nagging problem of youth unemployment that is both economically, that is an economic liability on the one hand with the unemployment, but it is a social disaster on the other one. Emergency public works is likewise supplemental. There is requirement again for a planning operation to have good public works projects which can be called into use on a timely basis and shut off on the same kind of a basis without great economic loss. In other words, most people have said about public works it takes too long to gear them up to get any impact. This bill would have a shelf of public works ready to be used, triggered into action when unemployment rates start to go up, and triggered out of action, in other words, released from action as the unemployment rate starts to fall. Furthermore, the planning section of the bill gives proper reference to the relationships between the federal, state, and local governments. And I think that's very, very important. That obviously comes into the counter-cyclical and emergency public works. But presently, our policy today really ignores what's happening at state and local levels. There's a federal government policy, a national government policy, without any relationship to what's going on at federal, at state and local levels. This bill obviously seeks to remedy that. And so what we have here is a combination of forward planning as well as what I call effective prophylactic treatment of the economic disabilities.
Senator, let me trouble you with one other question. The thing that seems to be on most people's minds is, can we have full employment without inflation? According to this bill, we can have. What is your analysis of this problem?
Now, the bill is, according to some people, weak in this area. I recognize that there is not the kind of specific reference in the bill that it might need. My judgment is that this will be looked over very carefully in committee as we review this proposed legislation. And it may be required in the bill that we do have what we call a national incomes, what do you want to call it?
National incomes policy. Sure.
That relates to certain types of specialized industries where there's
administered
prices. Yeah, and where there is sticky administered prices and where there are bottlenecks and where there's the opportunity for price rigging. But there may be the need of more specific guidelines. I recognize that. I think you have to be fair about it. But the bill does emphasize productivity. And the improvement of productivity is by far the best answer to inflation. No doubt about that. Also, there is historical precedent that ought not to be ignored. We have had in this country low rates of inflation and low rates of unemployment. The 60s had an average rate of inflation of 2.3, as I recollect, an average rate of inflation of 2.3. We once, during the 60s, got unemployment down, including youth unemployment, as an average to about 3.8. But our bill separates youth unemployment, teenage unemployment, from adult unemployment. Now we have as a goal, and I repeat, as a goal, 3% unemployment by the end of 4 years, a maximum of 3% unemployment at a period after 4 years. That is a goal. I hope that we can attain it. My judgment is you'll never attain it unless you have it as a goal. You won't even come close. The purpose of a goal is a way to measure performance. And while in order to achieve a 3% unemployment rate, you're going to have to increase your gross national product. You're going to have real growth. In other words, you can't get by with 4% and 5% and absorb the unemployed that we have and get down to even 4% unemployment. You're going to have a high standard by which you measure. That's going to compel us to take a good hard look at the tax structure of this country in terms of capital formation, in terms of the needs of investment, the improvement of our tools. Without that firm goal, I think you'll have a sloppy, lackadaisical effort. You've got to have something to discipline yourself to the effort. So that the 3% figure isn't just the figure on unemployment. It's a way of disciplining ourselves to productivity, to improvement of our tools of industry, to a more sensible monetary and credit and interest policy, to a better tax, to a necessary tax policy that may relate to specific industries and general taxation. That it has a way of compelling the governmental structure to really take a look at what it's doing to even come close to 3%. Now, the other point I've mentioned in there is that if you spin out the teenage unemployment, you would have actually, on basis of former years, comparison to former years, about 3.7?
3.5 to 3.7.
Yeah, between 3.5 and 3.7. So really, you're only about a half a percentage at best away from what everybody accepts today as a legitimate target. 4% is considered by the most conservative people today to be a legitimate target of what we call full employment. What Hubert Humphrey is saying is that with better tools, better credit policies, better tax policies, whatever is needed, we can reduce that level of unemployment and do it sensibly. Now, will it cause inflation? If it does, then we have to have the tools that are necessary. Antitrust enforcement, it has to be improved. Productivity consults, which we didn't put in this bill, but which we've established, ought to be energized. There may have to be a very careful examination of both wage and price structure in certain selected industries. It's been recommended that we might even have a delay period before certain wage and price increases went in certain select industries. I want to repeat, industries that have a pattern of either being bottlenecks, therefore having sharp price increases, or where there is a pattern of highly administered prices over a sustained period of time. Now, the labor movement doesn't like that, but I'm a public official. We didn't put it in the bill because we would like to see if we couldn't do this job without giving to the government a kind of a command performance to enter into certain types of management of the economy on wages and prices. I prefer no wage and price mechanism. I prefer it, but I recognize that it may be necessary in some industries. However, I do not want this bill to be interpreted as wage and price control. The minute that you get wage and price control involved in this bill, you're going to have price increases. It'll scare industry. So therefore, this bill is a sincere, honest effort to attain maximum performance of this economy without government intervention in terms of wages and prices. And I think that if we get cooperation from industry and from labor, we can do it. If we don't, then the public interest has to be served with guidelines, with more effective wage price stability council. For example, we've recommended to use the wage price stability council much more. The existing legislation, with its subpoena power, it hasn't used it. There are many things it could do to publicize. There are all kinds of things that could be used in terms of exercising some internal self-discipline.
Senator, I'm with you 100%, and I'm not going to ask any more questions. And I thank you very much.
I hope that we put in here some place that the empirical evidence thus far on inflation is very good. For example, we have been listening to Mr. Simon, particularly, and my old friend, Dr. Burns, that if you stimulate the economy too much, that you'll get more inflation. Now, the real truth is that we've had a very good decline in unemployment, from 9.5% down, or no, over 9%, down to 7.5%. The average rate last year was 8.5%. This year it's down now to 7.5%. What's happened? Gross national product has gone up, unemployment has gone down, and inflation is half what it was. Now, I'm an honest man about this, and I want to say that there may be a break point where that drop in inflation with the demand on labor, I mean with a fully employed economy, may be different than the evidence thus far shows. But I think that if they'll use the full kit of using publicity, using your wage price stability council, using the subpoena power that they have, using executive cajoling, persuading, taking a look at antitrust law actions that you can take a look at, and the Federal Trade Commission policies. There's a lot of things you can do to keep prices reasonable.
Good. By the way, are you aware of the fact that Jerry promised that a